Chapter 18. Build on the Rock. I have put on paper enough to reveal criminal magnetism and to meet its developments for time to come. Mary Baker Eddy, 1904. In 1900, a bylaw in the manual had stated, quote, "The communion shall be observed by this church annually on the Sunday following the second Monday in June," end quote. In 1901, the Woodbury lawsuit had caused the date of Communion Sunday to be changed several times before it was finally held on June 23rd. In 1902, it was again on the Sunday following the second Monday. But in 1903, the bylaw was changed to make Communion Sunday the last Sunday in June. Communion season was looked upon by many as the most important event of the year. It was always a difficult time for the leader, perhaps because so much worldly thought was focused upon her. Or perhaps malicious thoughts were intentionally directed against her and her followers at the time that thousands of Christian Scientists congregated in Boston. Whatever the reason, the leader was directed to change the date on short notice, which she did on more than one occasion. In time, the manual stated that annual meetings were to be held the Tuesday following Communion Sunday in June, but no mention at all was made regarding which Sunday was to be Communion Sunday. Obviously, flexibility was a necessity at this busy season. In 1904, there was a further attempt to lessen the busyness of communion season. A notice in the April Journal had stated, "Many inquiries regarding the communion and annual meeting of the Mother Church are being received. Therefore, it seems best to announce to all that a general gathering such as has taken place in past years is not contemplated this year. When our church edifice is built, then you can better afford the cost of coming." On the 7th of June, Mrs. Eddy wrote the following, which may be related to the news clippings she had told Mr. McClellan to ignore a few months earlier. The Mental Murderers. Their published boast in 1903 that Mary Baker G. Eddy would never again meet with her church is not fulfilled. She deems it wise for her church not to visit her home at each communion season. Also, the less ceremony we include in our worship, the better. Hence, I hereby notify my beloved brethren that I shall not attend the church dedications, but as usual, remain at home, working and praying for the prosperity of Zion. The mental assassins are in God's hands, and He will uncover their crimes and punish them in His own good time and way. Let us obey Jesus' command to bless our enemies and do good to them that despitefully use us. Mary B. G. Eddy. Pleasant View, Concord, New Hampshire, June 7th, 1904. The foregoing was published in the Sentinel of June 11th and in the July 1904 Christian Science Journal. Perhaps the public boast of the mental murderers had something to do with changing the date of Communion Sunday in 1904. But whatever the reason, it was not held on the last Sunday, but on June 12th, the second Sunday in June. Just before communion season, the leader wrote a most interesting letter to Mr. McClellan, June 1st, 1904. Beloved Editor, in your excellent article, quote, The Question of Omnipotence, end quote, Christian Science Sentinel, May 21st, 1904, you contradict your assertions. Pardon me, but reread it, and you will find you wrote that evil is not, quote, something that enjoys, suffers, or is real, end quote. Then, again, you speak of evil, quote, as a mirage that misleads the traveler, end quote. Who is the traveler that is misled and must suffer for it? Who but the evil so-called? And does not evil destroy itself through its own lie, namely a belief in evil, sin, suffering, and death? Yes, it does, in belief. And to sever it from this doom would be an evil of itself. Another letter of import was written on the same day. This one to Augusta Stetson and her church. The first time the leader saw Mrs. Stetson in 1884, she had said to her, quote, You are going to do a great work in Christian Science, end quote. In a letter in 1891, Mrs. Eddy wrote to Augusta, Oh, dearest, precious child, how much you have done and will yet do for our cause. None knows but me. End quote. In 1904, still none but the mother knew what Augusta would yet do for the cause of Christian Science. But her letter of June 1st, Miscellany, page 165, thanking the New York Church for their gift to the Concord Church, was elevating and fortifying Mrs. Stetson for this mission. Goodness identifies man with universal good. Thus, may each member of this church rise above the oft-repeated inquiry, What am I? To the scientific response, I am able to impart truth, health, and happiness, and this is my rock of salvation and my reason for existing. God grant that this church is rapidly nearing the maximum of might, the means that build to the heavens, that it has indeed found and felt the infinite source where is all and from which it can help its neighbor. Then efforts to be great will never end in anarchy, but will continue with divine approbation. Religions may waste away, but the fittest survives. And so long as we have the right ideal, life is worth living, and God takes care of our life. These words would be a great comfort to Mrs. Stetson in her days of trial. But in June of 1904, she was looking forward, as were thousands of other scientists, to the communion season in Boston. The leader's communion message to her church was little more than, quote, Already I have said to you all that you are able to bear now. End quote, followed by the words of the excellent hymn. I love to tell the story of unseen things above. Those who had been disappointed by the leader's notice of discontinuing the visits to Pleasant View were somewhat recompensed by her letter of June 11th, which was received during the progress of the first service and read at the close of each of the communion services. Beloved students, the new Concord Church is so nearly completed that I think you would enjoy seeing it. Therefore, I hereby invite all my church communicants who attend this communion to come to Concord and view this beautiful structure at 2:00 in the afternoon, Monday, June 13th, 1904. At 2:00 on Monday afternoon, Mrs. Eddy graciously acknowledged the silent greeting of her assembled students as her carriage drove past, stopping on North State Street. There she was greeted by Edward P. Bates, president of the Mother Church. She presented him with a small gift for her church and spoke a few words to all those within hearing distance. Concord's reception of all the Christian Scientists was as cordial as it had been the year before, and Mrs. Eddy wrote a letter of appreciation to the local newspapers. Miscellany, page 173. But very shortly thereafter, she published a rebuke to some Christian Scientists in the form of a new bylaw entitled Article 26, Thou Shalt Not Steal. Section 15. Neither a Christian Scientist, his student, or his patient, nor a member of the Mother Church, shall daily and continuously haunt Mrs. Eddy's drive by meeting her once or more every day when she goes out, on penalty of being disciplined and dealt with justly by her church. Mrs. Eddy objects to said intrusion, inasmuch as she desires 1 hour for herself. And she, who, for 40 years, had, quote, borne the burden and heat of the day, end quote, should be allowed this. The only exception to this bylaw is on public occasions, when she has the privilege of seeing others and being seen. How the leader loved and appreciated her few faithful students, who never obtruded themselves upon her or her time. On July 4th, when the nation was celebrating Independence Day, Mrs. Eddy wrote to Augusta Stetson, "Darling, my darling student, I have only time enough now to say your precious letter has healed my wound that was bleeding before I received your own words on this subject. I know the evil one is trying to turn you against me, and so discourage me and injure you more than aught else could do. But God will save you, and by adhering to his lonely, present, highest idea of love, you will hold to its principle and be safe. Oh, I thank him, and love my Augusta. Lovingly and everlastingly." The directors of the Mother Church had profited from Mrs. Eddy's rebuke a year earlier, at the time the cornerstone for the Concord Church was laid, and the laying of the cornerstone for the extension was done essentially in, quote, sacred secrecy, end quote, on Saturday, July 16th. Miscellany, page 16. The next day was the dedication of the Concord Church. The termination of visits to Pleasant View had been stated in Mrs. Eddy's brief message to the Mother Church on Communion Sunday in these words, quote, "My beloved brethren, as you are not expecting an invitation to visit Concord at each successive communion season, I shall not disappoint any hope of your receiving it. My heart goes out to you as ever in daily desire that the giver of all good transform you into his own image and likeness." End quote. An announcement Miscellany, page 163, read at each service of the Concord dedication, reiterated this message. Not having the time to receive all the beloved ones who have so kindly come to the dedication of this church, I must not allow myself the pleasure of receiving any of them. I always try to be just, if not generous, and I cannot show my love for them in social ways without neglecting the sacred demands on my time and attention for labors which I think do them more good. Lovingly, M. B. G. Eddy. In 1903, Mrs. Eddy had had Bicknell Young appointed to the Board of Lectureship. And now, in the summer of 1904, she chose him to read her message, Miscellany, page 159, at the Concord Church dedication, on Sunday, July 17th. His reading made her words memorable to those present, and the publication of her words in the periodicals gave them to the field and made them even more memorable. I send to you the throbbing of every pulse of my desire for the ripening and rich fruit of this branch of his vine. At this period, the greatest man or woman on earth stands at the vestibule of Christian Science. To live so as to keep human consciousness in constant relation with the divine, the spiritual, and the eternal is to individualize infinite power, and this is Christian Science. I am asked, quote, "Is there a hell?" End quote. Yes, there is a hell. The advanced psychist knows that this hell is mental, not material, and that the Christian has no part in it. Only the makers of hell burn in their fire. A small group of wise thinkers is better than a wilderness of dullards and stronger than the might of empires. Unity is spiritual cooperation. This message inspired the whole field. One earnest student wrote in appreciation, quote, "Single sentences in your address to the Concord Church contain enough inspiration for a life work," end quote. The leader also said in this address, "We read in Holy Writ, quote, this man began to build and was not able to finish," end quote. This was spoken derisively, but the love that rebukes praises also, and methinks the same wisdom which spake thus in olden time would say to the builder of the Christian Scientists' church edifice in Concord, quote, "Well done, good and faithful," end quote. Quote, "The builder of the Christian Scientists' church edifice in Concord," end quote, was Mr. E. Noyes Whitcomb, who was also the builder of the Mother Church Extension, which building was now in progress. It is altogether possible that this praise was intended as a loving rebuke to Mr. Whitcomb and all others involved in the deception. Or it may be that God inspired his anointed to write this message to meet a situation she was not yet aware of. Her own words could substantiate this latter possibility. "Whatever I have discovered, understood, and taught of truth, I have never known beforehand its why or wherefore. It has always come into my thoughts and gone forth in words or deeds before God's dear purpose in it and the fruits it would bear were fully revealed to me. I have always been called in spiritual paths to walk by faith and not by sight, to abide in the senses of God and not body for insight and action. Whether or not she was aware of the deception on dedication day, God was speaking through her to the builder. Mrs. Eddy had given the site plus $100,000 to build a church in Concord. The field had voluntarily contributed approximately $80,000 more toward its building, embellishing, and furnishing. But those in charge had not observed Mrs. Eddy's instructions on indebtedness, and Mr. Whitcomb had personally gone into debt, nearly $75,000, for added architectural features. So, in effect, and contrary to the rule in Christian Science, the Concord Church was not debt-free when it was dedicated. Those responsible had endeavored to keep this fact from Mrs. Eddy, and perhaps they did so temporarily. On other occasions, when her lieutenants went against her instructions or known wishes and endeavored to conceal that fact, she had written such terse remarks as, quote, "It is not wise to try to deceive me," end quote. In this case, she said nothing, even when it was, quote, "fully revealed to," quote, "her," as undoubtedly it was. The main lesson for the student today is to learn the meaning and importance of obedience. At a later date, the leader said to her household, quote, "If the work had been done in the time of Jesus, it would not have to be done now. But the disciples did not do their part. They were not obedient to him. They questioned what he was doing." End quote. Were not the woman's disciples just as disobedient and questioning as were those of Jesus? On the 21st of July, the leader wrote another letter to her, quote, "darling Augusta," end quote, part of which has circulated throughout the field. Repeat the following affirmations silently several times each day, not with strained anxiety to get something out of them, but trying calmly to realize the meaning of the words. God is all. There is no evil. All is harmony. There is no discord. All is health. There is no sickness. All is spirit. There is no matter. All is joy. There is no sorrow. All is truth. There is no falsehood. All is faith. There is no fear. All is life. There is no death. All is love. There is no hate. The leader knew that the evil one, or one evil, would endeavor to nullify the provisions she had made for her church in the deeds and in the manual. So she mentioned this point in a letter to her directors on July 25th, along with a reminder of the true church. "May our God, who is spirit, be worshipped by you in spirit, and the house you are about to erect be built on the rock of ages, while you, my dearest ones, are rearing in your consciousness a, quote, temple not built with hands," end quote, "and consecrated alone to the one and all, apart from all material considerations. Meantime, let me warn you to have the architect and builder of the new Mother Church decide early upon the best and most artistic and seeable part of the building for the outside inscription. Else, the evil one may give you trouble on this particular point. The, quote, evil one, end quote, had already given them trouble on another point, and a crucial one, the financing. At the beginning of the year, when they were just getting underway, the building fund was in a healthy state for that stage, when they received a letter from a friend in another city, saying that he had just been informed, and his informant claimed to have good authority for the statement, that the entire amount required to complete the Mother Church Building Fund had been paid in. Consequently, further payments or subscriptions were not desired. An editorial in the January 2nd Sentinel called this a, quote, subtle lie with which to ensnare a generous and loyal people, end quote, for probably less than one-fourth of the total amount required had been paid in. Nonetheless, this, quote, subtle lie, end quote, did affect the building fund until finally the financial situation was presented in the Sentinel of July 2nd. In August, Treasurer Stephen A. Chase received contributions from the church in Colorado Springs, together with a letter, which read in part, "On July 6th, last, our building committee was in session. It had met to pass finally upon the plans selected for our local church, and which were to be submitted at our business meeting of July 7th. The Sentinel of July 2nd had just been received. The condition of the Mother Church Building Fund, as therein set forth, was earnestly considered, and it did not seem right that we should build under such conditions, conditions that were a complete surprise to us. The result was a joint meeting with our board of directors and trustees, when it was decided to submit the selected plan, blueprints, and report on our proposed building. Then, read the article in the Sentinel of July 2nd, already referred to, and leave the whole matter to the church. This was done, with the result that the members unanimously postponed our building, discharged the building committee, released all pledges to our fund, and earnestly advised that the sums so released be turned into the Mother Church Building Fund. While under consideration, many beautiful expressions of gratitude and loyalty to our dear leader were voiced, and not one dissentient or disappointed word uttered, or, we believe, thought. As a church and individually, we are truly grateful for this opportunity. We deem it a privilege of which we joyfully avail ourselves. And we do want to be a branch bearing fruit, meet for our leader's approval and our true growth." Mrs. Eddy was deeply touched when Mr. Chase sent this letter on to her, and she answered it on September 1st, miscellany, page 19, closing her letter of appreciation and blessing with Jesus' words, quote, "Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached throughout the whole world, this also that she hath done shall be spoken of for a memorial of her," end quote. Mark 14, verse 9.